For a few days, I was thinking, I can't make this. I'm so angry. I'm so hateful right now. I can't be making a documentary called A Love Letter to Estonia. This is over. But the more I thought about it, I thought one of the main reasons for making the documentary is that so many people take personal experience, such as having a bad moment with a foreigner or something, and they try to turn it into something systemic. We hate this. We don't want that, and so on and so forth. And I couldn't do the same thing.
Welcome back to Found in Estonia podcast. My name is Tiina, and I'm here talking with different internationals who are living in Estonia. In this episode, I'm joined by a guy from the largest Latin American country, and it is Brazil. Nicholas has been living in Estonia for 7 years. He's a musician who writes songs about Estonian women. He started doing a documentary named Love Letter for Estonia. He has made handmade puzzles of Estonian nature, built guitars, and so on. So definitely a lot is going on with him. And I'm really excited to hear more about his adventures. So let's start from the beginning. Brazil is the largest country in South America and the fifth largest nation in the world. Where did you grow up, and what is life in Brazil like?
So I grew up in a city called Fortaleza in the northeast coast of Brazil. It's a beautiful city with lots of beaches. People from the south and so on tend to travel to our region to enjoy our nature. And my childhood was a very different childhood from the childhood that I see happening in Estonia. There may be a lot of beaches, but Brazil is also a concrete jungle, and you cannot escape those buildings, and even the lack of nature in the city itself. It's also a very, very, very dangerous country. And I usually tell my friends that if I could restart my life, I would love to have a childhood in Estonia. I see these small kids just walking around, getting to the bus. Damn, in the summer, in the airport, small kids all around. That's just not a reality in Brazil.
So what was your childhood like in Brazil?
Well, I had overprotective parents who didn't really enjoy the idea of a 10-year-old roaming across the streets. So basically, I spent my whole childhood reading books and magazines and the mandatory video game, I guess.
Mandatory video games, okay. And did you go outside to the concrete jungle or not that much?
I did. At some point, I rebelled against those rules, and I just said, I'm going out no matter what. And started riding bikes with my friends, falling in love with girls who rejected me. You know, everything that means being a teenager.
But if you say Brazil is a dangerous country, does that mean that big cities are dangerous, or living in smaller cities is also dangerous?
Everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. One of the things that shocked me when I arrived in Estonia is that the newspaper doesn't have a dedicated crime section with lots of pages. Even our lunchtime television shows are about murder in the streets. People literally eat looking at bodies, and other people in the street, hey, mom, I'm here, while there's a dead body on the street.
What? Oh, my God. So what is the... Okay, what is the most frequent crime about? Is it killing, or is it just robbing people, or?
All of it. I'll give you a very solid example. In March, the invasion of Ukraine completed 1 year. And I was reading the newspapers that there is an estimation that 18,955 civilians have been killed in combat. In a year, Brazil has 52,000 homicides.
Oh my God.
Half of it by firearms and the other half by stabbing or whatever other form of crime you can imagine. I have had a gun pointed to my face twice.
Okay. I've heard that Brazil is dangerous, but I didn't know there's so much going on and so many people getting killed and robbed and wow, okay.
It took me 8 years in Europe because I live in Dublin before. It was in Tartu in the middle of the night. I was coming home from some place, probably Mars, because of some nightclub. It was 4 in the morning. And when I arrived home, I started crying because it was the very first time in my life that I went home without looking over my shoulder.
Wow.
And it was an amazing sensation.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Well, no, I can't really imagine because my whole life I've been walking home from parties in Tallinn in the middle of the night, not feeling scared at all, and walking alone as a woman in the dark, no problem. Okay. So if people, usually and children, stay indoors in Brazil, are they all pale, they don't see any sunlight, and don't have any D vitamin or...
I mean, people still live. There's no doubt about that. It's a very lively country. We out there partying and all of that. But it is part of our reality. It is just what it is. If you open the newspaper in any given day, feminicide, homicide, kidnapping, all of it. It's just everybody I know has been robbed.
Is it then the country where people have security guys? Often,
yes. Or? Well, if you have enough money, sure. But big part of our economy is private security. We have something that is called the architecture of fear because the houses are all designed to try and not be robbed. We have broken glass on top of the walls, electric fences. Every single building has a sort of a doorman where the idea is to prevent robberies and so on and so forth.
Wow. And when you grew up, this being your reality, did you even believe that there's another reality outside of Brazil, in Europe, or in looking movies of American movies and not seeing people getting killed all the time? Or did you even know or could think about peaceful life somewhere?
Well, in American movies, people get killed all the time.
That's true, yeah.
I knew, exactly, because I used to read so many books and magazines. I knew that our country was just failing us. So I always had the dream of moving abroad, and I'm very lucky to say I managed to do it. And at first I moved to Dublin, which was so much less dangerous than Brazil. But then moving to Estonia, Ireland is very dangerous compared to Brazil, gangland and murder crimes and so on and so forth. When I arrive in the cab in Dublin and I'm saying, oh, Brazil is very dangerous, and the taxi driver goes, oh, Ireland is so dangerous too, we can't even leave our package by the door. And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Different kind of level of danger.
Absolutely.
Wow. So what made you move to Dublin, and why Dublin?
Quite frankly, I was extremely and severely depressed. Most people move abroad looking for dreams. All I wanted when I moved abroad was to not die. I've tried suicide many times in my life, and it came to a point where I wanted to live, but I didn't know how. And so basically, I tried to find a place to move. At first, it was US, but it's so complicated, so I ended up, I sold everything I had, and 34 days later, I was in the airport to go to Dublin. And I'm looking at that big screen at the airport, and I'm like, what am I doing? I don't have the emotional stability to go anywhere. And and I cry a lot, and I ended up coming. It was really, really, really difficult, but I managed to find a job in my area, IT. I already spoke English, and so I studied landscape photography in Dublin. And yeah, that's how I arrived in Dublin, looking for survival.
And how did you pick Dublin then? Just randomly? Or
when I tried to go, I wanted to go to New Orleans to wash dishes and listen to jazz. But to go to United States, you need to have done a semester of college, have this and that. So I asked, the lady asked, what do you want from life? I said, I want to work and have a good life. She said, well, Dublin is the place for you because the visa allows you to work 6 months and to study 6 months so you can make money while you're there. That was it. It took less than 5 minutes. Like, yeah, I'll pick that one. Let's go.
Wow. And how did your family and friends react? Were they happy for you to try to find a new beginning?
When I told my mother that I was leaving Brazil, she said, finally.
Wow.
So yeah, I had great luck. My parents, they never had this thing. Oh my God, my son is leaving, you know. They were like, go, go, don't come back.
Yeah, but they didn't want to leave, or they couldn't.
No, no, but they came every year to Europe, and I would take them traveling around because they don't speak English. And that's how I ended up in Estonia, actually, by bringing my parents to a trip.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you said you already spoke English. How common is it to be able to express yourself in English for a Brazilian in Brazil?
Not very common at all. We don't have enough quality education. There's a lot of private schools for English, but at least from when I was a teenager, you know, people don't take it seriously. And it's understandable. No English is used at all in Brazil. But I was a bit of a nerd, and I wanted to understand the music and the games that I play. So I had a dictionary by my side translating everything.
Nice. Wow. And did your mental health improve when you moved away, or was it still too unstable as you had scared?
It took a long time. And I am deaf. I have lost half of my hearing in both ears. So I'm in this new country with an accent that I'm totally not used to. And you can imagine me on the phone with the recruiter, and I can't understand anything that he says, and I'm so ashamed, and I'm like, what? The connection is breaking up? What? What? And turning off my phone because I'm like, oh my God, what am I doing here, you know? But I managed to find a job, and that just changed me. Like, it gave me some level of self-esteem to go abroad and get a job in an important area, making a lot of money and getting a visa, especially because they thought I was good. So that was the beginning of the change.
Yeah, this is nice. Definitely, if they think and tell you that they think that you are good, then it definitely boosts and gives you some more confidence to build up on. That's nice. So you stayed in Dublin, you worked in IT and studied landscape photography, and now you live in Estonia. So how did you end up in Estonia?
So every year my parents would come, and in this particular year, they had come for a couple of years, and I was looking for new countries. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, there's this country called the Baltics. Mm-hmm. I had heard the name of the countries, but I can't say that I knew anything more than name. And I wanted to convince my mom to come, and she was like, no, I want to go to Poland. I'm like, mom, everybody goes to Poland. Let's go to these Baltic countries. And she looks up Riga and Tallinn, and she's like, yes, let's go. They are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I made this huge trip. We went to many countries, and we spent one day in Latvia. Mm-hmm. And I get what I know now is the famous Lux Express to Tallinn overnight. You know, I live these things, and then after I move, I'm like, oh, okay, Lux Express and so on. And we spent one day in Tallinn. And when I was in Tallinn, I look around and I was like, there are so many beautiful women here. And a friend of mine kept bugging me to install an app called Tinder. So I installed Tinder in Tallinn, and I have several matches. And that's when being Brazilian, talking a lot was a superpower, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh, you talk so much. And but I left in one day and ended up meeting no one. But when I was on the boat to Finland, I started talking with this woman, and I went back home to Dublin, and a month later I came back to Tallinn to meet her.
Oh, wow. Okay. And is this a big love story that sparked from that day in Tallinn?
Oh yeah, we got married and we got divorced like any good love story.
I just had, who was it? It was Manan from Pakistan, who just said that Estonian women are the biggest import articles to Estonia. They bring in men, they get married. Then it often happens that they get divorced, but the men stay in Estonia. Is that the story of your life as well?
Yeah, pretty much. I kept coming back once a month. And then basically 6 months later, I moved to Tallinn. because I had a job offer in here as well as in other countries. But I had a girlfriend. I was like, I want a better work-life balance, so I'm going to move to Estonia. Mm-hmm. And we traveled the world together. Then we got married. And a couple of years ago, we got divorced. And the first question that popped in my mind was, wait, am I supposed to stay here? You know, okay. But I absolutely love living here. I want to die in this country.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I call police and I'm like, I just got divorced. Please tell me that I can stay. Like, they basically could bum. And I'm like, oh my God. No.
So how does it work visa-wise? Do you lose your visa when you get divorced? Or
I had the visa on the basis of marriage. So my alternative was to either get a job in Estonia because I work for a Canadian company, mm-hmm. or to go to college. So my plan B was to go to college. But when I called them, I say, look, I have a house in here. I have a life. I don't want to leave. And they say, oh, because you got married, it sort of cuts off 1 year for permanent residence. Okay. So if you have B1 in Estonia, you can apply. I said, I do. So yeah, you can apply right now. So last year I got, you know, permanent residence in here.
Well, nice. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And when you got divorced and thought about, do you have to stay in Estonia and you want to stay in Estonia? Why? What connects you with Estonia and what makes it special for you?
Sorry, I'm a bit of a crybaby. My mom often asked me, how did you find yourself in a country that is just so different from everything that we live? Mm-hmm. Estonia and Estonians more than Estonia taught me that there's a different way to live. Mm-hmm. There's a way where you can be quiet and appreciate the world around you. And Estonians don't need much to get by. Mm-hmm. And while I will never be in Estonia, and I admire the culture and all of that, but clearly, no matter how long I'll be here, maybe the most I'll be able to is, you know, sing Muarmozizama together or something like that. You know, I will always be a foreigner. Mm-hmm. It is for whatever reason, the first place in my life that I call home.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe peace has a lot to do with it. Growing up with a lot of crime and finding that there is a place that you can just be. Mm-hmm. It's just such a powerful feeling for me.
If you say you can just be here, do you mean it's you can do it anywhere in Estonia, or it applies to Tartu, or specifically to Tallinn, or some specific tiny village or somewhere?
Oh, I love Estonia as a whole. And quite frankly, if I had Tallinn is my least favorite place. Mm-hmm. Not so much because it's bad or anything, but it's just a capital, you know, and mm-hmm. it tends to be more, in a sense, to have less personality than the other place in the country. And so it would be anywhere. My favorite city is Tartu. But mm-hmm. quite frankly, with the right partner, I would live anywhere. And
And what do you like about Tartu?
I lived there for about 4 or 5 years. Sorry, let the coffee machine turn off. Okay. So I live in Tartu for about 4 or 5 years. And the thing about Tartu is that geographically, it's amazing in the sense of it's so compact. And after they introduced the Tartu bikes, which is just incredible, you can go anywhere without having a car and without really spending money. Mm-hmm. Other than that, when summer comes, Tartu is just its own thing. You know, people in the grass. And again, because it's a small city, you see them everywhere. Mm-hmm. In Tallinn, you can go kilometers just by car in a sort of a very sterile environment and so on.
Yeah, that's true. Tallinn has parks, but it takes a bit time to get to those parks. Yeah. But if your mother said that you couldn't pick a more different country than Brazil, then how do you compare Estonia and Brazil? What makes them different?
I was in Bulgaria last year. and mm-hmm. I was in the coast, and I needed to get some medicine, so I had to walk through the city. And as I go in, I'm like, oh, this looks like Rio de Janeiro. And immediately I was turned off. Oh. I was like, I don't want to be here. And that got me thinking to that question exactly. So I was walking those streets. So why do I like Estonia so much? And I came to this realization because nothing in here reminds me of Brazil.
Mm. So in a sense, you just want to escape everything that you grew up in and knew.
Yeah, in a sense, yes. With the other half being that I managed to do that and find a place to call home.
Mm. That's really, really, really nice to hear and sweet. Brazil is so huge. Did you ever travel inside Brazil as well, like you have done in Europe, traveling to different cities and different places?
I did go to a few places, yes, São Paulo, Curitiba, Bahia. It's huge and it's very, very different other cities. When I was in Curitiba, it felt like I was in some European city, as they have been, you know, colonized by the Germans and Italians and so on. What's your question?
Did you travel as much in Brazil than in Europe?
Yeah, sure. I traveled to those cities, and quite frankly, while I like Curitiba, I hated São Paulo. It was just this massive metropolis of concrete jungle. Quite a bunch of nature, sure, but in Brazil, nature is just something that's in the way.
Mm.
You know, you either have to put a road in there, or you have to rip everything and put buildings. But unlike in Estonia, oh, I'm a Brazilian, I want to spend some time in nature, you kind of have to hunt for it. In many cases, you need to have a car to get there. And so on. So it's very different from a situation in Estonia where you basically stumble on the street and you're sat inside a forest somehow, you know.
That's true, yeah. But as you learned, as you studied landscape photography, wouldn't it be more interesting to do photography in Brazil with all the mountains and rainforests and things? Is there anything interesting to photograph, to make photos of in Estonia as well?
When I came to Estonia, I was very surprised in the first times with my girlfriend how flat it is. And when I drove all the way to Germany, I was very surprised to see how the nature remains relatively unchanged up to Poland, really. And I used to tell people, if you want to come here to see like big features, mountains, huge, massive, fantastic things that you just look at it and you feel wonder, you won't.
Yeah.
But it's a place that if you sit and you really look, you're going to find something that can only be found here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to name it, but it's here in the forest, in the bog. It's there.
Some essence, some unnameable thing.
And as for photography, if you're really into it, you don't really need big mountains.
Mm.
All you need is an eye and a heart. You're going to find those things anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And, as I said in the introduction, you call yourself a musician and you write songs about Estonian women. How did that start?
To be very frank with you, my divorce happened. I had issues in my life throughout my entire life with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened at some point was that, well, I started taking medicine and I started working on my behavior patterns because, you know, you may take medicine, but you've been you for your whole life. It just doesn't go away like that.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I don't think I'll ever forgive myself for it. But one day I sat with my ex-wife and I said, I lost my entire youth.
Yeah.
I need to leave it.
Okay.
And of course, I broke her heart, but that's how the process got started. I came to this realization that I was finally happy, for the lack of a better word, and I needed to do I didn't even know what. I needed to figure it out. So in this process, I already made some music. And the more I met people, the more I heard that sort of comment of like, it's cool. What you gonna do with it, you know? And that's when I realized that as I write poems and this kind of stuff, that the way I like to write music was about things that actually happened. So that's how it started. It wasn't even the plan. But once I look at these songs, I was like, oh, damn. They are about things I live with Estonian woman, you know.
Does she like your songs?
Well, I always thought in my life that when you write a song or something for someone, that is somehow special, you know. But it's not. They leave me still.
So you're kind of like Taylor Swift.
You could say so. You could say so.
Do you have... You know,
Go ahead. You know, for example, somehow things keep chasing me. So much that I actually wrote a TV series about my life, and we're right now speaking with production companies and this stuff. But for example, I was camping with a woman in Kluger Yard of Kluger Lake. And in the middle of the night, this engine sound keeps coming closer to us. And I'm deaf, right? And I'm like knocking my partner. Can you hear that? It's like, yeah. So I opened the tent. There's nothing. But over the Kluger Lake, there's this absolutely huge red moon. I was like, come see. It's like, no, I want to sleep. So I just spent my whole night sitting at the beach, writing, looking at the red moon.
Wow. Okay. So the inspiration hits you on a random spot.
Yes, it does.
And through the senses that you thought you have even lost halfway.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, that's pretty special. Wow. Do you have any more songs coming out?
Yeah. I'm also a director. I decided to tackle all my dreams at once, you know, enough of not following my dreams. And I have a song called Who Saw the Funk Die on the Street.
Okay.
And we right now recording the music video for it. There'll be like three dancers dragging me through 12 memories of depression. So yeah, it's coming soon.
Okay. Is that a depressing song or it should be an uplifting song?
It's very upbeat. It's very upbeat with breath. And I'm just sort of telling this entire story because I write songs with no chorus and no repetitions. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to hear it. I was listening to your another song that you had about the one was out. The music video was really cool. Big production and everything. So, wow. I will write your links in the show notes as well so everyone can hear it, can listen to it. What are your other dreams? You said it's time to tackle all of the dreams in once. So what else is in the pipeline? So what else would you like to achieve or do?
No, people often think I'm an idiot. I agree with them, to be honest. because of all of these things, and they sort of may not lead anywhere. I don't really think of success or fame. I'm just like, I have no other choice, you know? I live half of my life not doing that. I cannot imagine going forward not doing it. My other dream is to publish a book.
Okay.
I've written 70 pages of a book called A Sun at the Heart of Estonia.
A Sun at the Heart of Estonia. Okay.
While the TV series chronicles my life after the divorce, the book tells the life before the divorce.
Okay. Wow. So your entire life story will be shown and written and shared. Yeah. How do you feel about that? Does it make you feel vulnerable or more stronger?
Definitely, at least at the beginning, very, very vulnerable. When in the rehearsals for the music video, I had never been followed by a camera. I, by any means, before my divorce, I was a very close, angry, private person, didn't have friends or anything. And when I danced in front of the camera and I came home, I was feeling so vulnerable. I was laughing and shy at first, But when I came home and he sent me the video, I look at it and I was like, it's me. It's finally me. So it's a very, very, very vulnerable thing. And like I said, I often feel like an idiot. But at the same time, it has made me much, much stronger in knowing what I want, in knowing that I have something to say, self-esteem, that I'm a good writer, and so on and so forth. So it's a bit of both, but the vulnerability is slowly going away. When I wrote the script for my TV series, I met with a producer, and her first question was, is this your life? And I was like, yeah, it's like very colorful. I said, thank you, Irish.
Wow. And the TV show and book, is the audience Estonians or is it going to be for Brazilians?
Estonians.
Estonians.
All I care about is Estonia. I don't care about any other place.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm so glad that Estonia won your heart, not Latvia.
Me too.
So your dreams are to do a TV show that is in the pipelines already, to write the book that you have written 70 pages already. Anything else? To build more guitars or puzzles or something else?
Maybe when I'm older, I would like to build guitars again. When I was doing it, I was a different person and it requires a lot of patience and love to things I didn't have. Mm-hmm. But I guess that my ultimate dream, my entire life actually, is to stop being a software developer.
Mm.
I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I'm really good at it, but I hate it.
Oh my God, that's probably like really hard thing to step out of because it offers such a good paying salary that you're probably already gotten used to it. And then it's hard to step out of things that you're used to.
When my ex-wife once got into our bedroom and she said something that I'll never forget. You know, I've changed career multiple times. And for me, it's all the same. I sort of get the same money, maybe a bit more, a bit less. But for you, the day that you stop being a software developer, your quality of life, let's call it, will drop considerably. So it's a very difficult thought to even consider before. But now that I have found myself, I would gladly get rid of that payment and just be able to pay my bills, directing videos and making music. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's. I heard from some podcast or somewhere that someone who was talking also about the subject that why many people don't follow their dreams is because they're afraid of earning less. But when they talk about their dreams, they're usually things that don't consider much money or that much money, like be more in the nature and paint or sing or stuff like that. So. It's an interesting thing to think about as well.
I've been finding my peace in some ways. When I was making the documentary, Armas Tus Kiri Esile, I was talking to a very famous filmmaker in the South, in Vaselina or something. And we were speaking about financing and finding financing and funding for the movie. And she was like, you know, I got like 500 euros 3 years ago for this documentary. And I asked her, are you telling me that I can be a much better filmmaker if I keep my job? It's like, oh, absolutely. You should keep your job and use that money to follow your dreams, yeah.
Okay.
So since I started doing that last year, I sort of like found my peace and I can sit down and be like, okay, I have a purpose, I have a dream. Let's get bored for 8 hours and then, you know, move on.
Yeah, that's also an interesting thing. Do you have to put the pressure on your job, everyday job, that it has to fulfill you? Or this is the... mean to do other things that fulfill you and your dreams. Yeah. The documentary that you were working on, tell us a bit about that as well. How did it start? What is it about?
Actually, one day I went to Photo Point to rent a little camera tripod for my phone, 4 euros a day, and I pick it and I go to the cashier. And the lady asked me, are you Estonian? I'm like, no. Oh, you can't rent it. Like, what do you mean I can't rent it? You can't. You can only rent if you're Estonia. And I was like, no, okay, I'm not a tourist. I'm a resident. I have my visa. No, if you want to rent this, you need to bring an Estonian friend. I'm like, are you serious? She's like, yeah. And so I thought there was no point in arguing with that person. Uh-huh. And so I went home and I was feeling like, wow, what did just happen, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I went home and on the Foreigners in Estonia Facebook group, I posted something like, hey, this private company is doing this, not renting to foreigner. It's up to you if you don't want to go there. And mm-hmm. I put the phone aside and I'm playing a board game. An mm-hmm. hour later, I get my phone and it has so many notifications. Mm-hmm. Everybody was attacking me. What are you not telling? Private companies can do whatever they want. And very capitalistic, neoliberal view of the world. And I went patiently to each person, answering with the second act of the Constitution, of Estonian Constitution, that you can't discriminate for the basis of this, that. And one Englishman even told me, you got your 15 minutes of fame. Now you can go back home. And it was when I was writing an answer to him, I told him, look, I love living here. Mm-hmm. And I want to live in a society that treats us all equally. Mm-hmm. And it was from that I was like, I was very confused and I was feeling this strange feeling. And I came to the conclusion, like, I'm white enough. You know, I am straight. I look Christian. I'm mm-hmm. like, I fit all the box of normal, yet I couldn't rent a 4 euro a day thing. Mm-hmm. What is happening to other people? Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to buy a camera, microphone, study, and make a documentary.
So you wanted to capture stories of other foreigners and also Estonians about things that how they've been mistreated then? Or...
Yes, but not only that, because I knew I couldn't make a documentary only about the negative parts. I didn't want to. But I wanted to make a documentary where everybody is telling a part of their life. And unfortunately, sometimes it's bad. Mm-hmm. And so I set out to interview 100 people. Unfortunately, I only got to 50. But I got to, it was me, my ex, and a little assistant that we had, a young lady. And after, it was a summer, the pandemic summer, which was quite light in Estonia. Mm-hmm. We changed. You can't interview 50 people for hours and not change. Mm-hmm. And we interview all kinds of people. We interview very racist people. We interview very nice people. And I've always told when I interview in English, but I could interview in Estonia, do not argue with those people. Mm-hmm. This is not a debate. Let them talk. Mm-hmm. So we have an amazing amount of material and I hope one day to finish it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was looking at the trailer on Hoende. And there were people crying, there were people sharing emotional stuff about school violence or unhappy memories as well. So lots of emotions and lots of stories. Yeah. And you also said that you have made handmade puzzles of Estonian nature. Let's talk about that as well. When did that came? When did all of your projects happen? Is it in a straight line? One ends, the next one starts, or it's all a big creative mess?
It's all a mess. I was traveling with my ex and we were in Chile. Mm-hmm. And I read an article about how board games and sort of analog games are having a resurgence. People are buying more of them. And I just had this incredibly stupid idea. Let's make puzzles. And when we come back to Estonia, I start researching how to make, and you have to buy this massive steel roller machine. And they only sell it in China. So we imported the machine, learned how to import machinery, bought proper cardboard from Netherlands. I commissioned a French artist to draw a beautiful drawing of Estonian culture and folk. And we made them, and I designed the box. But as it turns out, people don't buy puzzles, of course. Yeah. So it was a massive failure. And within a month or so after we started producing them, I look at my ex and I was like, let's close shop because this is just dumb.
Mm. But did you ever think about the print on demand? Because you could order puzzles from Printful or Printify as well.
I did think about that. And to be honest, I should have started with that. But I like doing big, idiotic things. It's just my thing. So yeah, it ended up being a failure. And I was quite shocked as well. I had this picture of the church in Karatsunuya. Mm-hmm. Because the church is slanted like the Pisa Tower. They built it and then the sand gave way and the tower is bent. Mm-hmm. And people that live in there were looking at the puzzle. Where is this? And we are literally pointing at the church. Oh, okay.
Wow.
So yeah, we ended up selling this machine to a scrap junkyard for 70 euros. And that's when I had an idea to start importing woodwork machinery. And so we did that too. And I sold machinery to Europe and so on.
Wow. What else have you done here? Woodwork machinery, puzzles, anything else? Any other adventures?
We had a workshop building guitars, but Estonia doesn't really have a market for 3,000 euros handmade guitars, you know?
Mm. Yeah, you should export it probably.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically it. The only other big thing I did in here was we started building a house. Mm-hmm. It was our dream to design and move into a house. It had a workshop area. And then the Estonian company that we hired for it scammed us.
No.
Yeah.
What did they do?
Basically, we paid for the whole house and they built 65% of it and said goodbye.
Really? Oh my God, that sucks.
I kept calling lawyers because we watch American movies and they're like, Your Honor, an injunction, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, there has to be something. But all the lawyers, even the very expensive ones, just told us, keep begging. That's the best thing you can do. I have customers who paid everything and got nothing. At least you got something. You go to court, 3 years, 30,000 euros. Then the judge looks at him. Yeah, you should build it. And then he won't.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the biggest reasons as well for our divorce. It really drove a wedge in the marriage. You know, mm-hmm. She was the translator and all of that. So I ended up failing as a human being, to be very honest, and became bitter. So that was a big trauma. I never thought I would leave Brazil to be scammed in a first world country.
Okay, well, yeah, if you put it like that, then...
And yeah. I was in the middle of the documentary. I was literally shooting an interview when she called me, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
For a few days, I was thinking, I can't make this. I'm so angry. I'm so hateful right now. I can't be making a documentary called A Love Letter to Estonia.
Mm-hmm.
This is over. But the more I thought about it, I thought one of the main reasons for making the documentary is that so many people take personal experience, such as having a bad moment with a foreigner or something, and they try to turn it into something systemic. We mm-hmm. hate this, we don't want that, and so on and so forth. And I couldn't do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't let this very personal experience just fuck everything up, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get over that, so we kept going with the documentary, but it was very, very, very difficult. It still is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Are you still filming? Are you still looking for people to interview?
We did that Rwanda campaign exactly because this house thing happened. So I ran out of money.
Mm.
And I was not expecting to fulfill the campaign, but I thought that people would watch it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a total failure. No one in Estonia watched it. Most of the donors of the Rwanda campaign were my co-workers from Canada.
Mm.
And it felt so disappointing that I stopped working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But then last year, POF, the film festival, has a short section, so I submitted to POF. But I also realized that you use the same website to submit to any film festival in the world. So I pick a bunch and submit it. I was rejected by POF. However, we got 12 best short documentary around the world. It's been on the cinemas in São Paulo, South Africa, India. So more people have watched it outside Estonia than in here. I don't know why no one cares in here. To this day, I try to email people and so on, but not.
Wow. Okay. That's interesting indeed.
So I want to finish it, but I keep waiting to meet someone that is in the industry or that matters in the media somehow, just to validate it and tell me you should finish it.
Mm.
But I guess that's not happening. I will have to find the willpower within myself.
Mm. And which part do you enjoy more, the hearing people's perspective and changing through it, or starting some new exciting projects, or getting the feedback and validation that you did something really well?
Well, in a perfect world, they would come together.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the reasons that I haven't worked on a full feature-length version of the movie is because we didn't interview anyone from either Viruma and so on and so forth. And I don't think it's fair to release a movie with just part of the population, if you will.
Mm.
And I don't speak Russian, so I need to find someone who's good at interviewing Russian to restart the project. And that's not really easy, especially mm-hmm. the type of interview that I do, which is this open-ended 25 questions where if the person starts speaking about their dreams for 1 hour, let that person talk.
Yeah. mm. How long were the interviews approximately? If you
that's
let them
funny,
talk for an hour?
You know, we met some Estonians that were very yes, no. So that would last like 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But we met some people who really, really enjoy talking. So we have interviews that are 4 hours in duration.
Oh.
It's an editing nightmare.
Yeah. Yep. Indeed. Yeah. I've had with this podcast as well, different people, different guests. Some really like to share all kinds of stories and they keep telling more and more stories, and some are just... Yes, no, a little, okay.
We've had the experience of even interviewing people who clearly message us just because they wanted to be on the camera.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to say nothing, but they were just like, can we pause it? Can we take a selfie together, guys? I want to post on Facebook that I'm participating in documentary. And we're like, oh my God. You know.
So you're helping to make people famous.
Yeah.
Well, besides the documentary that you're hoping to finish and new music videos coming out and books, well, that's actually quite a lot, but do you have any other like bucket list in Estonia that you want to visit or do or see some traditions or things?
One of the best things I've done in Estonia was to skydive.
Oh, okay.
You can go in Rapla to skydive, and I did it twice. And this combination of freedom with seeing nature from a completely different perspective that you use, that was like the last item of my bucket list. I'd be so fortunate. I'd be everywhere in Estonia. I've had a drunk Estonian in Tallinn once, angry at me because I knew more of Estonia than him. But that's normal, you know. I don't know a lot of Brazil. When you travel, is that you're more interested in getting to know it.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to go back to Kihnu one day.
To where?
To Kihnu. Yeah.
Okay.
I had a very nice time in there, and I would love to go back in there. I would like to do some kind of multi-day hiking. I'm not sure if I will ever be prepared for that. You know, I don't like camping. But that said, in the scope of my life, I am very, very happy to say that basically if I die today, I've done everything I ever wanted.
Wow, that's a really nice place to be. But doesn't it get boring then, that you have already done everything you wanted?
That's why I keep going crazy with TV series and music videos. You watch that music video. In the 5th episode of the TV series, we're going to rebuild that fake bedroom set to show how I became that person.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Have there actually been any traditions that have really surprised you here throughout the years that you've been here?
Say that again.
Have there actually been any traditions, Estonian traditions, that have really surprised you throughout the years that you've been here?
The Estonian traditions?
Yes.
The first thing that shocked me was, so I live in Karatsinuya, and my ex worked at Karatsinuya Kuturikeskus. So I was there all the time watching the parties and folk dance and stuff. And the first week that I'm here, I see this beautiful, beautiful folk dance, just so structured and so beautiful. And in the same evening, I go to a nightclub and I see the Estonians dancing all stiff and hard. And I'm thinking, okay, they're very good at dancing folk dance, but not necessarily at a nightclub, just letting the body go. I'm still getting used to the sauna idea. For a Brazilian, the idea of getting to a room to get hotter doesn't make much sense. But I'm getting used to it. I did sauna naked for the first time a couple of months ago, you know, with people I didn't know. That was a very different experience. You know, I was with a woman and we had never been together before. So we're naked in the sauna and I'm telling her, look, I need 5 minutes to calm down and get into the sauna mindset, you know. It's not common for me. Took some time, but I adjusted. One thing that I don't understand here, especially in concerts and parties, is how many times people give flowers to each other. All the time. I'm watching an orchestral concert and it's like an entire flower shop has been bought. And brought in there multiple times to everyone. I don't get that part.
It's just a nice gesture. You know, if you when I grew up, when I went to school, then every 1st of September, on the first day of school, you bring flowers to the teacher. Well, then if she has birthday or something, you bring flowers. If there is some kind of special day, you bring them flowers. Yeah. Yep. Anything else that I interrupted with the flowers, but
yeah, the Yanipaev, right? I mean, that was if I search there's surely more stories, but I can't remember right now.
Yeah, so funny. That's a nice point that in folk dance we can all, or people who dance folk dance can follow the lines, make the compositions, and the nightclubs, people don't have directions, so they feel really lost. You also mentioned that you don't really like to contact other Brazilians in Estonia. How easy is it? Because I hear more and more Brazilians are moving to Estonia. How easy is it to avoid them?
I think that's about 300 to 400 Brazilians in Estonia, at least in the last time that the embassy published some stats.
Wow.
And of those, there's about 23, me included, that has permanent residence. It's very easy to avoid Brazilians. You just don't go to the places that serve Brazilian food or something like that. The thing is, I don't like speaking Portuguese. And Brazilians love speaking Portuguese. Even when they're fluent in another language, they just prefer to speak Portuguese. I've been speaking Portuguese only with my mother for 10 years now, like once a week. I've been forgetting words. I like to think I'm pretty good at English and I can express myself. And also, Brazilians like to talk about Brazil and I hate it. You know? So if I know someone is Brazilian, sure, I'm nice. We can strike a conversation. But I never understood people who go abroad and start an entirely different life and look for people from their own country to hang out all the time together. You know, give me Estonia any time of the year instead of Brazil.
Yeah, I guess it's comfort zone. You want somebody who understands you better at some point.
Yeah, it was a serious problem in Dublin, because in Dublin, when I lived there, there were 45,000 Brazilians only in Dublin. And you could see in the bus, in the tram, everywhere, a group of Brazilians talking together. And I had a couple of friends with me. And when they left a year later, they didn't speak English at all. Because they were always hanging out with Brazilians. And it's one of the most common things, Brazilian going back to Brazil after English exchange and still not speak English.
Yeah, that can definitely happen if you don't expand your comfort zone and go out. And how is your Estonian? You said you have B2 level, right?
B1.
B1. You won, okay. How did you learn it, and how much do you speak it or understand it?
I learned it basically on my own. I had a private teacher for a month or two. But I think the language is easier than most people try to make it. This scary monster, you know, it's just different. I have no hopes of ever speaking 100% correctly, but not even Estonian Jew, apparently. And when I left home, I had to start using a lot more. I joined EMTA, the Estonian Academy of Music and Theater, and I was doing college in Estonia.
Yeah.
When I requested to change, you know, director was like, I need to talk to you to see if you can do it. Come to my office.
Okay.
So we stand there for 10, 15 minutes, and he's asking me questions in Estonia, where I'm from, what do I do? And if I know any music theory things in Estonia, I'm like, no, look at my notebook. I'm reading music theory in Estonia. Look, I'm writing what they mean in Estonian words. Like, oh, okay, yeah, you can do it. So for everyday communication, you know, iga paevelust, sure. And my main problem is I like talking so much. And I like talking about deep, complex subjects that I've switched to English because I can't say those things in Estonia, right? So it's difficult to get to a mindset where I just use Estonia all the time, especially as my company is in Canada. So my co-workers are all English-speaking people. But hey, next time I have a girlfriend, I'm going to make her talk to me only in Estonia.
Make her? Wow, that sounds tough.
It's actually difficult to convince people, can you talk to me only in Estonia? People forget or they want to switch to English and it just gets forgotten, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Because I have entire conversations in pharmacies or gas station or anywhere where I'm speaking Estonia and the person is answering me in English for 5 minutes, this kind of thing. I was by Ulemiste and the family was coming and I asked them in Estonia, hey, do you know if there is any hiking trail in here? And the guy starts answering me in English and I'm speaking Estonia. And at the end, I ask him, are you understanding my Estonia? He said, yeah. And I'm like, what the f... Okay, thank you.
Yeah. I don't know where that comes from. I think maybe people are just, they want to make you feel better and more comfortable, but then they forget that, well, then you won't advance in a language if you don't get any practice.
And the other thing that you can't get rid of, and I was interviewing a Mexican who speaks amazing Estonia for many years. And I was asking him, does this still happen to you? He said, yeah, all the time, which is you speak Estonia and people cannot resist, but at the end be like, oh, double points, you're learning Estonia, you know? And in his case, he was like, I speak Estonia for 7 years, but it's all the time. It's nice, but at some point it gets a bit condescending, if you will, you know? Yeah, thank you, thank you. But it's a constant.
Interesting.
When the boat delivery driver sometimes get lost and I'm like, "Tule takasi ja pure ke paremmalle," you know, and the person gets out of the car, "Tule pois vanhaesti." Thank you, Elta.
Yep. That's something that you don't really get from many other countries. Like I was traveling in South America and few months back and I was like trying to speak Spanish because that's the way to interact there. Nobody told me good job. They were just confused if they didn't understand few words or they saw that I don't understand their answer.
It certainly opened a lot of doors for me, even if it's just, you know, a smile at a cashier, at a pharmacy, when you start speaking Estonian, some people you can immediately see that they get, oh, nice, you know, and want to talk to you. So that's a very good aspect of it.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite words or expressions in Estonian?
The funniest word in Estonian for me is a very uncommon one, is papagoi.
Okay. Why?
I think it's because in Portuguese it's papagaio. And I just like feeling my mouth and say, papagoi, papagoi, papagoi. I just find it funny. The first thing I ever learned how to speak in Estonia was arrow, but there is a nikuma.
Okay, that I won't translate, but the first one, papagoi, is parrot for the people who don't understand Estonian that much. The second one, who taught you that?
You know, when you're asking your girlfriend and her friends, teach me something, and people usually teach you cursing or something, and one of them used to say that a lot. And in my first business lunch, people asked me, oh, can you say something in Estonian? And I was like, I only know one phrase and I don't want to say it. And it's like these 10 people, no, say it, say it, say it. And I'm like, I don't know. And they just get so awkward. Oh my God, you know, like silence. And the same thing in Brazil, people would laugh, you know, and make fun of it. But everybody was so awkward. Oh my God. Yeah, sorry.
Maybe they didn't know if you understand it or not. Maybe they thought you would think it means something else.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, okay. Interesting. But what we haven't talked about is food. You like Estonia so much, but do you like Estonian food as well?
If I'm at a birthday party where they have that complete sort of assortment of Estonian food, a lot of them scare me to even try.
What scares you?
I don't remember, but there's like this egg thing that you cut the top and you put something on it. I never tried that.
It's so good. You should try it.
I once made a video at my apartment. We invited like 15 foreigners and we only tried Estonian food, me included. Yeah. You know, kamala, sult, different types of pickles. And sult is something that tastes better than it looks. But I would never eat that. I hate pickles, so that's also out for me. I love sweet sukala, right? Smoked fish. But I can't remember the names of the things because I was just eating them years ago at my ex-wife's birthdays and so on and so forth. What I get from Estonian food basically is if the person knows how to cook, it's good.
So by that you mean if they add spices or just what does like know how to cook mean in your books?
Like my ex-father knew how to cook very well. So whatever he did just tasted good. But the same kinds of stuff that sometimes I would eat at a birthday party where, you know, order and made and it was just not nearly as good. But in terms of spices, you know, here, I think that the most common spice is chill. It goes in everything.
It's so easy to add to things, especially if you have a small garden, then there's usually some dill and it's just, you just add it.
Yeah, too much.
I don't even feel that it adds any flavor. I just think it looks pretty when it's on some salads or sandwiches.
It's probably because you ate it your whole life.
Maybe. That's true. So what do you eat on a daily basis then?
Usually I make Italian food, you know, pasta with sun-dried tomatoes and this kind of stuff. I like eating sushi. I sometimes make Brazilian food. There's a place now in Tallinn called Café Brasil in Kalamaya. And I've been there in the last few weeks. It's a bit on the expensive side, although I understand they bring things from Brazil. But the food is quite good in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know the owner, she actually lived in Brazil as an exchange student. And then she, in comparison to you, really loves Brazil. And she really wanted to bring the flavors and tastes to Estonia and introduce it to people. Yeah, and she was telling that there are a lot of sweets with, what is it, condensed milk that Brazilians eat. Do you miss these?
No. No? My mom had a bakery when I was a kid and we just had sweets and pastries all over. And customers or clients would come in and be like, oh my God, your kids must go crazy. But I never liked sweets in my life to this day.
Wow. Okay, you're not the first person who says that, but like the second person who I know who doesn't like sweets at all. Okay.
Although my mom loved kuhuket. She's obsessed with it. She wished there was something like that in Brazil, but there isn't.
Yeah, maybe she could start making it or bring it back to an Estonian cafe over there, Cafe Estonia.
Oh, that's a nice idea. I will communicate that to her.
Yeah, only serves kohuke and have those eggs. And
it won't be very successful, but she can try.
Cool. It's been really, really adventurous and interesting talking with you. Is there anything else you want to add or say before we wrap up?
Foreigners, they tend to complain about the winter. Mm-hmm. In all fairness, Estonians too. And when you arrive the first and the second, it's pretty unreal. It's so cold. First snow, you may be digging your feet knee high on the snow. But when I meet those people, I always try to tell them, don't look at the winter. Look at the fact that there are four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was one of the biggest things in my life, to be able to see the cycle of nature and that feeling of late autumn where it's fresh, but it's not warm or hot, and you can still get a bicycle and go around Tartu. You can't replicate that anywhere else in Europe.
That's a good thing to tell the people. Do you have other tips for getting over the cold period? The main one, as I understood, is then thinking about that the spring will come.
The main thing I tell people as well is, look, I live in Dublin. And UK and Ireland is the same. Winter is much less harsh, much less, but it's way more miserable because it's just gray sky and rain all the time. Mm-hmm. And when the winter is good in here, or bad for some people, as they call it, it's just amazing to see the snow, to be afraid of sleeping on the ice. It's just a whole new range of emotions that you wouldn't experience otherwise. And I never understood in the movies how could the sun be shining so bright and be so much snow around, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now I get it. And I just think that people should get used to this. It's a beautiful part of the year too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that you brought that out and said about that. Yeah. Indeed, we have four seasons and we tend to forget it when we only complain about the winter.
My first 2 years in here, I didn't, in Europe, 3-4 years, people crazy for the summer. But now after 10 years in Europe, I became one of those people. Yes, summer's coming.
What do you look forward from this summer that is coming?
I have one of those cars that the top comes down.
Oh, nice.
So I look forward for driving and seeing red moons over the Kluger Lake.
Mm-hmm. Nice. That sounds really lovely. Yeah. With those warm summer weathers.
Just get in the grass. In Brazil, the grass is something to not be stepped. If the grass looks good, there'll be a sign, don't step on the grass.
Mm-hmm.
And in Dublin, first summer, everybody on the grass eating food. I was like, my God, I found a new world for me. And so just this feeling of being, even if with just one friend by the side of a lake, sitting in the grass, watching everybody enjoy themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so good.
That indeed sounds really tempting and nice. I wish this summer brings a lot of good weathers to enjoy picnics on those grassy spots and parks.
Yes, me too.
Yeah, and with that, thank you so much for being my guest today and sharing your amazing adventures and the things you're up to and talking about Brazil and talking about your love for Estonia. I appreciate it a lot. And for all the listeners, thank you all for listening and being here. And you can find Found in Estonia on Facebook, on Instagram, and on foundinestonia.ee, where you can also join the monthly newsletter. And please share these episodes with other people who you think should listen to it and would be inspired as well. Thank you, and see you in the next episode. Bye.